If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com. I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 759. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and a lake village, colonization and colorful dress, slavery and the door of no return, as we go to the African nation of Benin. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Benin, or as Wikipedia wants me to say it, Benin, but I will defer to the guest here. I'd like to welcome to the show Rachel DeCoste from yearofreturnbook.com, and who has come to talk to us about the country of Benin. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
First of all, we're probably going to need to put this on a map because some people are wildly Googling right now in Wikipedia. Where is the country of Benin?
Benin is in West Africa. The biggest countries nearby are Nigeria and Ghana.
And why did you find yourself in Benin in the first place? Let's start with that.
I did a DNA test years ago. I am African Canadian, meaning my ancestors came here as enslaved Africans. We don't know where from.
Right.
And I thought the DNA test would be a good way to find out where my origins were from. After I did the DNA test, Benin was one of the top countries, along with Togo, Nigeria, the whole region, really. Mm-hmm. And then I took a trip there for 6 months, and Benin was one of the five countries I visited.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Benin?
What I loved about Benin was that it was authentic in terms of it hasn't yet been too Americanized, too Westernized. They still wear the traditional clothes, drink their traditional teas, eat their traditional food. And it really felt like you were transported back to a time. They've kept their culture almost intact.
Okay.
And that's why you would want to go to Benin versus another country that might be more Westernized. There's something authentic and organic about Benin that is so heartwarming.
And now, Benin is a small country, as I recall.
It's actually a smaller country in Africa, but it's the same size, approximately the same size of Ohio.
Which always surprises me how, you know, I look at a map and it's a small country on the map of Africa, and I do forget sometimes how big Africa is. Interesting. That is larger than I would have thought. Now, you spent a couple months there, but if somebody only had a week or two, what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for them?
You probably land in the capital, Cotonou, which has museums, restaurants. Any big port city has similar things in West Africa. Mm-hmm. But the itinerary would have to go to Ouidah, which is maybe an hour and a half west of Cotonou. Ouidah, it has the door of no return.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it's the voodoo capital of both the country and probably the continent.
Okay.
So there's a festival every year, and they're very proud of their culture. So that's where you would start with Ouidah. You would go up north to Gonvier. Gonvier is basically a lake city. It's like Venice, but in Africa.
Okay. Well, that's intriguing. Okay.
You got to go there. And then you would go, if you have time, you can go even more up north to Abomey. Abomey is the ancient capital of the Abomey Kingdom.
Okay.
In fact, the whole region used to be called Abomey before it changed names to Benin. So that's the ancient capital. You can go to the royal court. There's museums there. In fact, in the coming years, they're apparently getting back their original artifacts from France and other European countries and building a museum in-house, which will be nice. Then you're going to go back south to Porto Novo, which is the administrative capital. Don't ask me why all these African countries have two capitals. Porto Novo has many museums, statues, etc. And you would probably go back to Cotonou to the point where you started. That's about, I'd say, 10 days.
Okay.
If you have even more time, you could go all the way up north to the safari called Pengeri Park. Apparently, there are elephants there that roam along with the village people. And I've only heard good things, but I haven't gone myself because it's a trek to get up there.
Well, and you mentioned as you're going up to Abomey, you're only going up maybe 30 miles away from the coast. So we're really, your itinerary is really in southern Benin, just so people know. And so the safari park that you're saying is much further north.
Yeah.
Excellent. So starting back at Cotonou, you say there are museums and such. What would you recommend we see and do in Cotonou?
Cotonou. That's okay. So the well-to-do neighborhood in Cotonou is called Haie-Vive, H-A-I-E-V-I-V-E. There are bars there that are very westernized, Americanized, but still have an African touch. There's fancy restaurants, there's ice cream parlors, lots of embassies in the area. And that would probably be your home base for most of the time, unless you're in a fancy hotel. That's really where you would spend most of your time. That's where I spent most of my time. There's a grocery store you can walk to in that neighborhood that has French pastries that remind me of home a little bit. And yet there are street vendors that sell really, really delicious and affordable street food. There's a lady outside at the main corner every night about 7 o'clock. She sells something called come, C-O-M-E. And basically, it's fish and a doughy white, I don't know what to call it. It's some kind of starchy dough.
Okay.
And fish, and it's extremely spicy, so you want to lay low on the spices, because I love spices, but it set my hair on fire. But it's really delicious, and it's really affordable, and it feels like it was made fresh every day. The only problem is if it rains, she doesn't hang out there. So you might have to head out to maybe a restaurant that's a little bit more expensive and, to me, less authentic.
And when you say more expensive, on what scale are we at?
Oh, my. A meal, if it costs $10, you're in a fancy meal.
Okay, that's what I figured.
But the five-star hotels and the five-star restaurants, including one called Le Privé, The Private in French, Le Privé, Lebanese-owned African food, service, like they went to service school. It was excellent. And to be honest, I had my wedding reception there for 10 people. It was about $20 per person, and we had like a six-course meal.
Okay.
So that's a very affordable. If you want to eat fancy, it's a great place to go because it won't cost you an arm and a leg, and you still get quality. But even if you get street food, it's still good.
Okay.
You can also go to Obama Beach. Yes, after that guy.
Who is not from West Africa.
But all along, there's really an extremely long beach because it's the whole coast. And hanging out there on weekends is a favorite pastime of locals. You'll know that there are families that go out together because they're all dressed in the same exact fabric.
Wait. So they buy the same print because they make their own clothes and therefore that's why they're dressed the same, or it's just a cultural thing, or?
It's a cultural thing. They have their clothing made.
Okay.
There are seamstresses and tailors.
Got it.
There's more of them than there are Starbucks. Like, it's everywhere at every corner.
Oh, you mentioned getting a suit made or something like that while you were in Benin.
So I got an escort. Usually I get somebody's name from the hostel or hotel or bed and breakfast or Airbnb where I stay, and I ask around. Unfortunately, you can't really use the regular search engine to find stuff in some of these countries yet, so it's all about word of mouth, but they all know somebody who knows somebody.
Oh, yeah.
So you ask somebody, hey, I'm trying to do this. Can you find some? Go through your network, and within a hours to days, depending, they'll go on their WhatsApp or whatever, and they'll find you somebody. You negotiate a price. You try to get the local to negotiate the price for you.
Sure.
And then away you go. And while you're with this guide or this escort or whatever you want to call this person, you might also use them as a resource. They often know a lot of stuff. You might ask them, what is there to do this evening? What is there to do exciting in the city? And they might say, oh, there's this festival going on. There's sure. this mm-hmm. exhibit at the museum. There's a lot of word of mouth. But I would say Obama Beach, Dream Beach, Family Beach, they'll have live music, outdoor restaurant, and just a very family-oriented, kosher, good time on evenings and weekends. The most exciting thing about Cotonou, if you're a tourist, is going to the market.
Sure.
It is the largest outdoor market in West Africa. It's called Dantokpa. You probably want to go there escorted, but even if you don't, just wandering around is kind of the wildest thing you can do, probably in the country. That's the most kind of rock and roll thing to do there. There's just everything for sale. Everything from food to tools they use for the deities to clothing. There's nothing that you won't find there. Mm-hmm. And if you want to get custom-made clothing, don't make the mistake I made. You have to actually bring the fabric to the tailor.
Okay.
There's a plethora of fabric. In fact, I think I spent 6 hours total browsing fabric stores because there's just so many and it's hard to pick. And I ended up just asking my escort to pick for me because I don't get it. But picking fabric is a science. They know what they're doing. You probably don't. So trust, if they pick a fabric you think is ugly, they probably know that it'll look cool when it's in a dress or in a suit. You just can't tell by looking at the fabric. And they also know which fabric is higher quality versus lower quality. There's about 3 quality levels. And as foreigners, I would not know the difference. So mm-hmm. that's another reason why you want somebody to help you. But you take your fabric, you bring it to the tailor. Again, get the tailor through word of mouth. Everybody knows one. Everybody knows one. Mm-hmm. And the tailor will measure you. You might want to get a couple dresses or outfits done, and it'll be done exactly to fit your body type. You might want to tell them ahead of time, please add a couple inches to both sides of my hips, only because West Africans like to wear their clothing tight.
Okay.
And we tend to want to breathe a little bit. Uh-huh. So you might have to tell them to building a little bit extra so it's not on my skin tightly. But other than that, they are very, very well-trained tailors. Uh-huh. If they wanted to, they could make another Milan or Paris in Cotonou. It's part of their culture. And the whole families, like I said, will buy the same fabric uh-huh. and go out on evenings and weekends together wearing the same fabric from grandma to the baby to uh-huh. the grandson. And so when you're on the beach, you could tell which families are together because they're all wearing the same clothes. Sometimes couples will do that as a show of their unity. Hmm. And also you notice when you see funerals or even New Year's Eve or what's the date in January where the kings, is it called Day of the Kings, January 13th?
I do not know.
In the olden days, the Catholic people had a day to celebrate the kings. I believe it's January 13th. And they will all have a special outfit for that religious holiday. Kind of like if we had a special outfit for Christmas Day.
Okay.
That says Christmas on it, which means you can only wear it one day or else it kind of looks weird. Well, that was everywhere. They had a festival and everybody's wearing the same outfit. It's really interesting. To be honest, that's something I took back with me. I got some outfits done for my parents and myself and my siblings. And sometimes we go out in Ottawa and show off.
Would that possibly be Dia de los Reyes or the...
Yes.
Okay, so we're talking about Epiphany, January 6th.
Epiphany, that's right.
Okay, got it. The Day of the Three Kings is the Day of the Kings. Got it. All
right.
There
you go. Epiphany.
Okay, excellent. Now, you mentioned museums. Is there one in Cotonou that you particularly loved?
The best ones weren't in Cotonou, if I'm being honest. There was one artsy one, which I can't remember the title. It's probably the biggest one. And they had a whole exhibit, a permanent exhibit about Gelede masks.
Oh,
which
interesting. Okay.
Which cover your face. And depending on what characters are portrayed in that, it might mean something in their culture or in traditional dances or ceremonies. That was just fascinating. And it's just a great piece of artwork, mm-hmm. but the best museums were in the capital.
Okay. Excellent. Well, then do we want to move on to your next stop?
Yes. So Ouida has different spellings depending on what colonizers. I saw different spellings of the word Ouida. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
Either with an X, an O, or a J.
Yeah. And I think it was originally a slave port for the mm-hmm. Portuguese. But by the end, there were five different European powers with a different fort to hold their cargo mm-hmm. in Ouida. It was, in fact, Ouida is important because about 2 million Africans left Africa from that port, one of the busiest slave ports in the continent. Most of us Black people probably have one ancestor who passed through there. And that's really the most important part for me to go there, is to go through the Door of No Return, which is a monument to commemorate the slave trade. Next to that, there's a monument to commemorate X number 100 years of Catholicism in the country, which I felt the kind of way about that, you know, aren't they related? Like, I don't know. And on the route of slaves, which is the road that led to the boats that were waiting to ship their cargo, it's maybe a 2-mile walk. And there's a particular tree there that apparently enslaved people had to walk around 3 times to forget where they're from before they hop on the boat as a way to condition them. And so some of us are encouraged to walk the opposite way to remember our origins in a symbolic way. So that was a symbolic trip. And Ouida is also the voodoo capital. There's a couple of voodoo temples. There's a python temple. They venerate pythons. And that might be something of interest. And it's what's interesting is that the python voodoo church and the Catholic church are like opposite each other. And what that, I think, also confirms is that the average person in Benin practices both religions.
Now, you sort of skipped over the they venerate python, if that would be of interest. Do they do snake handling, or what kind of, how does one venerate a python?
I'm afraid of...
From a distance would be my answer, but...
I'm afraid of all of that stuff.
Okay.
I don't touch the animal. I don't touch snakes. So I just walked in front of it. I didn't go inside. But if you pay, they have tourists that go there. You pay, sure. And you can watch them feed the pythons, pet the pythons. It's their friend. And they have a certain tribal group. It's not at all Benin people. Mm-hmm. A certain ethnicity really venerates them and has a relationship with that animal that is amicable and respectful, and they don't get bitten by pythons. They're their friends.
Okay.
I personally don't touch snakes.
That's all right. I might go there.
I'm going back again next year, and I will this time go and see, but I'm not touching anything.
Okay. Anything else we want to do while we're in Ouida?
Ouida's a little bit more quiet, mm-hmm. at least every day of the year, except January 10th, which is National Voodoo Day, a stat holiday. There's a whole week-long festival in Ouida. Europeans come and fill the hotels and everything. Hmm. So apart from that, it's a little bit of a sleepier town. And my only advice is, if you think you might get hungry in about an hour, go to the restaurant now.
Okay.
There's no such thing as fast food.
Okay.
And so plan ahead.
Got it.
Oh, also, when you are in Ouida, you go to the Slave Memorial Slavery History Museum, which is a restored fort that was built by Portugal originally, and Portugal rebuilt it as a heritage monument. The other slave forts were burnt down to the ground in the late 60s or early 60s, I believe. So Portugal is the only one that's left. You get the whole tour. It's an excellent tour. It goes through the history. And that was probably the most emotional part of my trip, is going through that and seeing where they held children without food or water for weeks. if you happen to survive that couple of weeks testing the waters thing, that means you're strong enough to be put on a slave boat to the Americas. If you don't survive, oh well, we just dump your body in a mass grave that is still there. I was too distraught to go to that mass grave, but if you want to pay homage to your ancestors, that might be another place that you might want to go and leave flowers and say a prayer.
Okay. Anything else we should talk about in terms of Ouida, or should we move on?
Move on.
All right. Where are we moving on to?
Ganvier.
Okay.
Ganvier is spelled G-A-N like Nancy, V-I-E like the Beyonce-E with the accent at the end.
Okay.
And Ganvier, I had never heard of any of this before, and I have been to Venice. It's a Venice of West Africa. These homes were built on stilts, on water. The transportation is all these long boats called pirogue.
Okay.
And that's how they live. The school bus is a long boat. Children know how to navigate on these boats. It's quite unique, kind of romantic, and just fun to watch.
Well, usually if you trace it back, the people move out to lakes and things like that for protection.
Well, that's actually a good guess, and you'd be right on that.
Yeah.
During colonization, while sure. there were people kidnapping innocent people and sending them out to slavery,
yeah.
Word got around. And so some of these smaller villages figured out that they could move to a lake area, a lagoon area, and that would cut them off from the outside world. So originally that's how it started, and they're still there.
Interesting.
In Ganvier, my guide, the guy who was the guide for the tour of the village, mm-hmm. it's a lagoon kind of tour on the boat.
Sure.
He mentioned that he also has a nonprofit, that he's worked with some of these reputable nonprofits that we know and love. And the nonprofit is about helping girls stay in school. Often in rural Africa, especially in Benin, is no exception. If school costs money, then you send the boys out to school and the girls right. are going to be learning mm-hmm. to cook and clean and do other tasks. Now, school is now free in Benin, but if you are a farmer and you have multiple children, you need somebody to help you tend to the crops, and usually that's the girls. So in order to encourage girls to be sent to school, they provide them with school supplies, meaning mm-hmm. crayons and paper and things like that. So I got to meet this tour guide who also has a nonprofit. And the second trip I went to Africa, I brought some pens with me, and mm-hmm. every girl in several classrooms got their own pen for the year. And that's my small contribution. But it's something that you might think of doing. It doesn't cost much to go to a big box store and buy a whole bunch of pencils and give them away to people who will really appreciate it.
It's great too if you can contact somebody like the person at the nonprofit first to make sure what they need, because I've been in classrooms in East Africa, for instance, where 100 kids in a classroom, 3 books or something like that. And so if you can figure out what they need, it can be quite helpful. So yeah, I've been to Africa one time where we brought one whole suitcase of school supplies each for a group trip. So quite useful, quite helpful. We should also mention that Ganvier is on a tentative list of UNESCO World Heritage Sites. It is that unique.
It was fantastic. Great pictures, great adventure. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a great surprise. I don't know why, but I never saw that coming.
Very cool. Excellent. Anything else you want to say about Ganvier?
No, not really.
It doesn't look like a place that you spend multiple days necessarily, but tour and see and take a lot of pictures.
Pretty much. It's a one-day trip.
Okay.
Don't go on a day that's rainy because the boat is not covered. And it's just exciting to see
sure.
them talk about the kids that are, when there are toddlers, they are physically tied by a rope from their ankle to their house.
Huh.
In case the toddler falls in the water, you just pull on the cord and he's going to come back in.
Oh my gosh.
And you see actually that happen. The little kids are running around with a little rope around their ankle.
Oh,
I love
gosh.
It.
Huh. Excellent. Where to next?
Where to next? We're going to go north to Abomey, I believe. So because Abomey is an ancient capital, it has a regal history mm-hmm. that they want to keep. They have a statue that was particularly poignant for me as somebody who hasn't still learning about African history.
Sure.
And the statue is of a king, a former king, Behan Zeng was his name. And he's doing like the Diana Ross stop in the name of love, like the stop sign.
Okay.
Remember?
Yep,
and
I gotcha.
That's to symbolize how he resisted colonization. He did not welcome in the colonizers. He said, you know what? We don't want this thing. We want to stay as we are. Well, of course, the French kidnapped him and sent him to exile and killed them. But the idea of resistance, I think, is great. I think sometimes we're taught that people collaborated with this institution. But I love that they had a whole statue in a piazza dedicated to a man who fought that practice. And in Abomey, I went to the Royal Kingdom, which you can see how they lived. It's now a museum. You can buy art. You can learn about the history, their proud history, the Amazonas women who were warrior women at the time of colonization. They were called Amazonas by the French. I don't know that that was their actual name, mm-hmm. but they're known as strong women who were the warriors, and they would die rather than quit in a battle, and they often won their battles. Unfortunately, they've all died out by now, but that story still makes the Benin people proud. And I have to say, on the way up, so it's a bit of a trip to go to Abomey. It's not like a one-day trip. You have mm-hmm. to probably sleep there. It's a good 8 to 12 hours to get there, sleep there, do the whole tour the next day, sleep there, and then come back.
Okay.
So it's a couple of days. And during one of these trips to go all the way up to Abomey, I'm taking a cheap taxi, I guess you could say, a street taxi. Well, I think it's called a bush taxi.
Okay.
Bush taxis are a guy with a car. Usually there's no seatbelt. And he just makes patrons pay for their seats.
Okay.
And then he goes.
It's a collective taxi.
There you go. It's a collective taxi. So mm-hmm. the destination is known. You're squished inside this collective taxi.
Sure.
Somebody's sitting, you know, in a sedan where there's two people in the front and mm-hmm. the middle is supposed to be empty. You're not allowed sitting on a stick shift. Well, there they sit on a stick shift and it works. I mean, I am not complaining, but at a certain point when you have no AC and it's plus 100 degrees outside, and there's no shade, and you're hot, and you're squished, I decided I was going to pay for two seats so I could have both of my butt cheeks on one seat.
Okay, good tip there.
Which is, for us, maybe an extra $2. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Right.
It's affordable for us, but mm-hmm. they don't understand that. And I had a complete meltdown where I said, I'm not doing this. I want two seats. I don't care what you say. Make it happen. And I just had a complete blowout. And my guide, and then they agreed. On the way home, back to Cotonou, my tour guide, which was next to me in the car, he said, you know, they were talking about you for most of the way home in the native language. And they said that even though this girl is clearly an American, she probably has Amazonas blood in her.
Oh, interesting.
Which is the greatest compliment ever.
Uh-huh.
So if you ask enough, they'll understand. I don't like throwing my money around, but it's at a certain point, you just need to be a little bit comfortable. In some of these collective taxis, you might also have cattle with you. You might have chickens might also be
sure
mm-hmm. in the car. Go with the flow. It's cool. It's a great adventure. They won't hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
So Abomey is just interesting in a historical perspective to pay homage to the kings that once ruled the whole area. And it's just interesting. Like it's capital I interesting to see artifacts that they kept. They have, you know how in British history, they have an ensign for every king and queen of England going
sure.
back to like, Well, they have the same thing in Abomey, which is fascinating. And they'll describe to you in the museum which symbol means what, why there's, for example, one of these kings had an egg as a symbol. An egg is fragile and there's hands on it to make it look like he was protecting what was fragile. Like, they have a real interesting symbolism. Like, I found it interesting on so many levels.
Well, and this is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's probably the only one right now in southern Benin. The other ones are more natural sites that are further north in the country. The other thing to know, and this is one of those things where history is complicated, so they were some of the peoples who resisted imperial colonization, but they also dominated the slave trade. Basically, when you mentioned the city before that was built in the lake, they built it in the lake to get away from the Fon people from Abomey, who were the people who were selling their fellow Africans into slavery because it was the prisoners of war. It was the people who they defeated in war, and they were the big power in the area. So history is complicated.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
I thought also in Abomey it was interesting that they had the golden door, and I could be wrong. I could be saying it wrong. The ancient door. There's a very important door in Abomey.
Okay.
It's the door to the kingdom. And 1,000 years ago, somebody from a different tribal group stole the door.
Huh.
And the door magically came back on its own.
Okay.
They know which family group did this 1,000 years ago, and they're still mad. And it just made me think about the ethnic rivalries that are still kept alive to this day. Uh-huh. And if you have the last name of the guy who did this 1,000 years ago, don't even come to Abomey. Like, you're not welcome.
Well, and of course, one of the ways that European powers were able to go in and colonize these areas is they would not try and fix those problems, but they would take advantage of those problems to pit people against each other, because they would be coming in usually with better technology, but a lot fewer people. And so you pitted one group against another. And if they're still mad for what happened 1,000 years ago, then that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. And where do we go after Abomey?
After Abomey, you will go back down south towards Porto Novo.
Okay.
Porto Novo is the administrative capital. Uh-huh. It means new port in Portuguese, which tells you who was colonizing at the time. It's a lot smaller, calmer than the big capital, and it has the best museums, in my opinion.
Okay.
One of the museums is about ethnic history.
Okay.
And they have old voodoo costumes and traditional ceremony costumes. Very interesting museum in terms of culture. Another museum is called the Da Silva Museum. Uh-huh. It combines a lot of things. There's a theater. There's a link to Brazil history there. Apparently, some of the Brazilians who escaped slavery came back to Africa, and that might be one of the places they came back to. And it also pays homage to African leaders across the whole continent. I'd say sub-Saharan African leaders across the whole continent, most of whom fought colonization and lost their lives in doing so. It kind of, I have to say, there's a room where they have a picture of every single one of these leaders who lost their lives, starting way back in the 1800s all the way up to the 70s. It took my breath away because I didn't realize how many people were fighting for independence and lost their, how many leaders fought for independence and lost their lives. And the tour guide will go through a couple of these really interesting stories about how they were poisoned, and the Europeans would pay off some double agent, and they used poison or different ways to stop the movement towards self-determination and freedom. And it was kind of shocking to see that many, but at the same time, I think it's important us to know the other side of the story, because often we hear about the European side. So now I heard the side of the story from the mouth of the African person.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Another thing that was interesting in, it's called a private museum, private ethnocultural museum.
Okay.
They have a huge homage to a person who I don't consider an African leader. He's the guy who started the Haitian Revolution. His name is Toussaint Louverture.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
They have a whole homage to Toussaint Louverture there, and a big tree and a quote, the most famous quote of him, of his, which is, if I'm paraphrasing, "Dear Frenchman, by kidnapping me, you're cutting only a branch of the tree of freedom. The roots of freedom are deep and numerous, and they will grow back." And that's what's his way to say, you could kill me, but you can't kill the idea of ending slavery, of freedom. And that's exactly what happened in 1804 in Haiti, in what is now called Haiti. So I'm just happy to see that they claim him. They claim the revolutionaries in the Caribbean and the Americas as their own. So you saw MLK, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Toussaint Louverture, and many other leaders being acknowledged in this African History Museum, something I haven't seen in the United States, frankly. There's often a bit of a myopic view of Black leaders in the United States, which excludes people outside of the United States. And I thought it was cool that they see the whole picture. So that was exciting for me as a Black history buff to see that and learn about that, those stories. So that's really the biggest thing at Porto Novo. There are sometimes weekend festivals, like any capital city, there's little festivals that they'll do. Like it was a jazz festival I went to once. Just keep in mind that they are on African time.
Sure.
Don't show up on time like me. I showed up. It starts at 2. I'm there at 1:30. I want to get a seat. We're the only people there.
Sure.
So you might have to sit down, have a drink, have an ice cream, people watch. I'm not saying it was bad, but just keep that in mind. Don't be an American like me and show up on time.
Okay.
So that's it for Porto Novo. Porto Novo also has in the main piazza, it has another statue of a great leader who has his hand, who is welcoming somebody in. And that's to symbolize that this person collaborated with the Frenchmen and the Portuguese. Maybe he did so under duress, I don't know. But it's the opposite of the King Beyonce, who had the stop in the name of love sign. It's the opposite. So that was kind of interesting. And that's it for Porto Novo. It's only about an hour outside of Cotonou. It's an easy day trip if you want to go back and forth. And there are many, many collective buses, I guess you could call them, who do the Cotonou Porto Novo back and forth daily. So it's the same idea. You stop them on the main highway. There's only one highway. And you pay for your seat. You squished in the back. And an hour later, they drop you off in downtown Porto Novo.
Excellent. Now, I think that was your itinerary that you laid out. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay.
If you have more time, you can go all the way up north to the Pengeri Park, which is a national park. It's apparently a great safari. It's just far to go there. Mm-hmm. You can also go by helicopter if you have the money, which depends who you are.
Because this is all the way at the northern border.
All the way up.
Yeah.
It's a distance. It's a hike.
It's on the border with Burkina Faso.
But those who have gone, the reviews have nothing but great things to say about it.
Okay.
So something to think about. Another thing that some people like to do is go to Grand Popo, which is a beach resort area, probably 3 or 4 hours away from Cotonou, west of Cotonou, towards the Togo border.
Okay.
That might be something that you want to do. I don't know that there's anything else to do there but hang out on the beach, but apparently it's a very, very forgiving beach. In terms of the beaches in Cotonou are not really for swimming because the waves are too strong. The undercurrent could sink you. I would not recommend you going to the beach to swim. It's kind of like just a hangout place for the locals. But apparently the waters in other parts of the country might be more forgiving.
Got it. Excellent. Well, are we ready to do some wrap-up questions? Actually, I want to talk to you a little bit more about food. You talked about going out to the street vendor and getting the fish dish. Are there other things that you discovered while you were there or rediscovered that you would recommend?
For me, one of the great things about Benin or the realizations about Benin is to see that a lot of food that I thought was Caribbean seems like it's actually from Africa, whether it's gumbo or the way they cook their fish, their fufu, which is a doughy starch ball. That all exists in the Caribbean. So I just thought it was cool that some of the cultures kind of seem to have transported from Africa to the Caribbean. But generally, I'd say 99% of their dishes, the traditional dishes, are a starch ball, meat, and some kind of sauce.
Okay.
The meat can be fish, beef, or goat, or chicken.
Okay.
Usually they're spicy. The sauce might have a mixture. There's always tomatoes in everything. Diced tomatoes, sliced onions, and depending on what the recipe is, they'll have some mix of vegetables in there that have been cooked, so you can't see what it was originally, but it still tastes good. The part I'd be careful with is the starch ball. Whether it's futu, fufu, moyo, kum, there's about 100 different kinds. And basically, it's either wheat or manioc or some kind of grain or flour made of corn, like corn of the cob type of corn. And they make it into a starch ball. Yams also. And locals eat these starch balls like they are candy, but I can eat about half of one before I'm full, and I feel full for the next 3 days.
Okay.
So it's not for everybody, but I just take half of a starch ball and still use it to dip into your sauce and eat your meat with that. But it's an acquired taste, and I feel like for a country that's largely not poor, but developing country, cheap food that fills you up is probably a good thing. You don't want to have millions of people requiring a lot of food. So I think it's a quick to make. It's easy to transport. It's filling, and it works with their diet. And they tend to live a long time, so they must be doing something right.
Well, it's interesting because I haven't been to West Africa. I've been to East Africa. There, it would be a starch ball ugali, which is usually rice or corn. So similar, but my impression is, from what you said earlier, more spices in this region.
Everything is spicy. I love spice. I have to ask everything to be low spice or no spice, and it's still too spicy. I can't tell you how many times my eyes are watering, and they supposedly went low spice for me.
Got it.
It takes time to adjust. Yeah, you definitely have to ask for no spice because they know how to tone it down, especially if you're not a local. If they can tell you're not a local, they probably know that to do that ahead of time.
Right.
Sometimes I feel like they might have thought I might have been a local.
Sure. You're going to be a little more likely to be confused with a local than I am.
Exactly.
Sure.
So sometimes I think that they forgot I was a foreigner and gave me
the
top grade spice.
Interesting. As we get to some of our wrap-up questions, I know you know these are coming. You did your homework. You were standing in the prettiest spot in Benin. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I would say that I'm standing on the beach in Cotonou where the sun is setting and I see all these cute little families in matching outfits. And it just makes me feel kind of fuzzy, wuzzy, happy inside.
Are you sure that's not the spice from your fufu?
Could be that too.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Benin.
Only in Benin are you just minding your own business and you see a voodoo deity walking around in the street with a following and making a lot of noise and scaring people a little bit, or are they pretending to be scared while they're running away, but they're watching? I just find that whole spectacle funny.
As long as they're not walking with a snake.
No snakes.
And if you had to summarize Benin in just 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
Authentic.
Okay.
Organic.
Okay.
And calm.
Interesting. Calm.
Calm.
And why calm?
Calm in contrast to the neighboring countries.
Okay. Okay.
It's right next to Nigeria, And even Benin people tell you don't go there, or be forewarned before you go there, because it is a different rhythm of life in Lagos, which is a couple hours away from Cotonou. Mm-hmm. And not everybody's ready for that kind of rhythm. And I find, as a foreigner who's starting their maiden voyage to Africa, this is a good start because it's calm. It's politically calm. The people are calm. There's just, you don't have to worry about certain things. They're calm.
Okay. Got it.
And they're calm in a good way.
It's also a lot large, a lot smaller rather than, like, Lagos is a huge city.
I've listened to the podcast. So the guy said chaos. Those are three words. What else do you need to know?
Right. Well, and it's 14 million people versus Cotonou, which is about 700,000. So,
if you want to take small bites out of Africa, start with a calmer place that's more just calmer. It's just easier.
Excellent.
And I speak for myself. One thing I forgot to talk about, though, yep. I want to make sure I get this in. Two things. First, if you want to make some side, if you have time, you want to do some side trips,
yep.
You can go to the capital of Togo. It's called Lomé. Lomé is a party town on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights. Great nightlife. In fact, a lot of people from Cotonou go to Lomé for the weekend. And if you have your visa for Benin, at least as of right now, you can go to Togo without requiring an extra visa. So that's just one less headache.
Okay.
I did that on a weekend and I had a great time in Togo. Togo was noticeably poorer than Benin. They had a bit of a dictatorship issue. I don't know, something political that's not good, but they make up for it for their nightlife.
Okay.
And then the next thing I wanted to say is, when you want to get around a city, whether you're in Cotonou or Porto Novo or anywhere else, Benin innovated this in Africa. They have taxis that are motorcycles that are identified by the shirt that they're wearing. So in Cotonou, they have yellow shirts.
Okay.
And so you know where the taxi is, you flag them down, and you negotiate a price with them, and you hop on the back, they take you there, and that's the way to get around.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. I'm familiar with the motorcycle taxis from, like, Southeast Asia, but the yellow shirts would be a good thing to know to look for.
Exactly.
Very it's easy cool. Out,
and then depending on the city, it's a different colored shirt, but they're easily identifiable. Mm-hmm. They're called Zem, or Zemijan is the really long way to say Zem. And Zem means take me there quickly in the Fon language, the native language of Benin.
Okay. Interesting. And our guest again has been Rachel DeCoste, and we mentioned the yearofreturnbook.com, and you may have figured out from that her whole saga here of going back and discovering her roots is a book. Tell us just a little bit about what countries you went to besides Benin.
I went to Ivory Coast, Senegal, Togo, Benin, and Ghana over 6 months. Small towns, big towns. I pretty much thought I would never go back to Africa ever again, so I turned over every single leaf possible. And I share the adventure with all the people that want to hear it. Basically, it's an audiobook. Mm-hmm. I promise you, you'll laugh and you'll cry in a good way.
Excellent. And I'll put a link to Rachel's website in the show notes, but yearofreturnbook.com, just in case you aren't looking at the show notes, is where you can find that. And Rachel, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for the country of Benin.
It's my pleasure. I recommend everybody book a flight. I promise you, yes, it'll be rock and roll. Yes, there'll be stuff that wasn't planned, but you will have a good time.
Africa has a way of getting under your skin, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I had a meltdown in public, which I don't normally do.
That I've never done. Okay.
But I still had a great time. It was such a great adventure that I had to publish a book about it. That tells you how great it was. I've done 40 some odd countries before. I've never felt the need to write about it until now.
Special thanks go out to the patrons of the show who help support the cost of the show. And you too can be a patron of the show at patreon.com/amateurtraveler to get the episode before anyone else does, and then also to get an ad-free version and to get a monthly Zoom call and also some tchotchkes. And special thanks this week to Chandra, who is our latest patron. Thank you, Chandra. I heard from Deborah on the show we did recently on the Galapagos. Chris, I've been listening to your podcasts for a few months now, mostly while I'm hiking. I enjoy the variety of destinations and guests, especially your dry sense of humor. The Galapagos episode was great, a walk down memory lane for me. We were there in 2013 and just loved it. I agree with you that the best Galapagos experiences are in the water. We snorkeled with turtles, sea lions, iguanas, and even penguins. Yes, the water was definitely cold enough for the penguins. It was a real thrill to be so close to these amazing creatures sharing their natural habitat. You didn't mention that there's a book about the people of Floriana Island that tells the incredible story of the German doctor and his mistress, along with a German baroness and her two consorts. What a cast of characters. I read the book before our trip, but I admit the stories and people are super weird, so the book might not be for everyone. By the way, we followed up our Galapagos trip with the Inca Trail Trek, which made a nice double destination vacation package for active travelers, that is. Yeah, there definitely is something that I see a lot of people do, and I know that Quasar, who I went with, often will book people through to some other experience, either in Ecuador. You know, we were talking to people on the boat who were going off to the Andes or going off to the Amazon, or I didn't think we talked to somebody else who also went down to Machu Picchu. The book mentioned is Floriana by Margaret Whitmer, and I will put a link to it in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I also heard from former guest Jeff Ulfs, who wrote about the episode we did on Florida, the Space Coast, who said two comments on the episode. At NASA's Kennedy Space Center is the congressionally designated Astronauts National Memorial, aka Space Mirror, authorized in May of 1991, which honors the 25 astronauts who lost their lives on space missions. And just north is Canaveral National Seashore for beaches and sea turtles. I did not know that about the National Seashore. Good to know. Thanks, Jeff. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com like Jeff did, or make a comment on this episode like Deborah did at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.